Greetings, bad movie lovers, and welcome to a special sneak preview of one of the new members-only series here at the show, Bimon Sci-Fi Con.
That's right, it's Bimon Sci-Fi Con!
Join me and my co-host Stephanie Kennerly, who you may remember from such episodes as Volcano, Sudden Death, and Life, as we get together twice a month to venture across the landscape of science fiction from the astounding to the absurd. Last time out, we were talking about a very sweaty Charlie Sheen in David Tuohy's The Arrival. But this time, we're taking things a little bit more seriously, talking about the X-Files movie from 1998. Please enjoy this sneak preview. Okay, so the X-Files. We talked about this a little bit at the end of the last episode, and I don't remember exactly why you pivoted to this. I'm glad you did. I mean, I love the X-Files. I've always been a huge fan of the show. But yeah, what was like the link to get us from The Arrival to the X-Files?
The Arrival had sort of like a, you know, underlying plot thread of aliens coming in to kind of like take our planet from us and like colonize an already populated planet. That's right. So that was what I thought of. That's what made me think of the X-Files, because, you know, alien colonization scheme.
You know, when I had seen...
Wait, hang on. The word is colonization, not colonization. Okay. Back to you, Nick.
with the X-Files movie in particular, I like remembered so many elements of it, but I think, you know, I was what, 14 when it came out, and so I think it was just like over my head at the time, because I watched the show, but I wasn't paying attention to like the through line sort of that was connecting everything. And so before watching the movie, I went back and I watched the pilot episode, which fortunately in the pilot episode, it spells out quite a lot. And it's very flattering in terms of its description of Mulder himself, in that it like the way that he's described is he's like a brilliant PhD in psychology. Nonetheless, he's basically the foremost authority on serial killers. And he wrote some of like the best literature on serial killers, and then he just went nuts, I guess, and was like, I found the thing that I love the most. And I guess it was just interesting to me because he always seemed so much like the outcast in the way that they frame him. And then even as the show continues to go on, I think from the first episode, I almost never see him wear glasses again. But in the very first introduction where Scully walks down into his office and you meet him, he's got glasses on and he has read the full dossier on Scully, and he knows her whole history. And they always make him seem sort of like dumber from that point. Like they put this respect on him as being this brilliant investigator and like a really intelligent person. But then it's like, he's just the weirdo who likes the alien shit in the basement. Right. And so it kind of like diminishes who he is, I think. But in watching that first episode and then jumping to the last episode of the series before the movie came out, which was called The End. Right. And yeah, so I was like, maybe they really were thinking about ending the show, or maybe it hadn't been picked up for more episodes at that point. You can see like the smoking man is introduced in the first episode. He kind of is just like quietly in the FBI field office when we're meeting Scully, just hanging out. And then they actually mention a name, I think, that pops up again in the movie, which I think is Kurzweil. I could be mistaken, but they definitely mention some name in the background of that first episode. And then in the finale episode of season 5 before the movie, we find out that whatever has happened, the smoking man is not actually dead and he's back. And the last thing he does is he burns Mulder's office to the ground and steals the only file that matters to him, which is the abduction file on Mulder's sister. So in the first episode, like, you get a lot of why Mulder does what he does, and you get this idea that Scully has a lot of respect for Mulder, and she actually says to him, like, I really wanted to work with him because he seems like a brilliant person. But there is kind of this thing, this push and pull, just in terms of who she is and what she's there to do, because we do find out that she really is there to basically undermine him and try to get the X-Files shut down. But because of them investigating weird things and her not having a ton of answers for it, it makes it seem like she ends up sort of like being on his side in that way. And that's where their relationship comes from. And so by the time that we reach the movie itself, it's like it's of two worlds, in that you don't necessarily have to have watched seasons 1 through 5 at that point to understand what's going on. But I feel like you probably would have wanted to, because it does make the movie better, in my opinion, to have some of that background. Because even though it is trying to reach an audience that wasn't just the TV audience, it is a movie that feels like an episode of the show. And it is clearly made, at least on the forefront, to be a vehicle for people that have given their time to the show for the last 5 years.
Yeah, it's a pretty, seems like a pretty difficult thing that we're trying to do with making it, you know, something that could be enjoyed by people who were not familiar with the show, as well as something that is enriched, is enrichment for people who were every day, every week viewers of the show. So, like, there's that weird balancing act. And I thought they did it really well. But again, like you, I also had seen the show before the movie. And so I was caught up on all the mythology and such. So I don't actually know how somebody who didn't have the background would have received it. But I thought that they did a pretty clever job of kind of giving us an info dump that didn't feel awkward. They had Mulder in the bar talking to the bartender, and she goes, well, what do you do? And he just like lays out this crazy monologue of, you know, like, I'm the key part of this government conspiracy to, and it reaches down to the lives. And it sounds awkward, except that it's completely in keeping with Mulder's monologuing style that his character does throughout the show. So it kind of gives that like background dump of information for the people who are not caught up, but doesn't make it seem awkward for the everyday viewers.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And you kind of need to get that out of the way in a way that is not like an overly long expo dump either. And so, you know, this is coming off the heels of the post-bombing briefing, interrogation with the FBI leadership. And so he's drinking. And so you can sort of casually dismiss it as like, oh, he's this crazy person. And then also this is actually going on. So, of course, it sounds crazy, and some random stranger in a bar is not going to like take him seriously. So it's a way that you can like say all these things without it ever having to like have real life consequences. So it's a cool little like trick that they pull off there. But then as weird as that is, like when he first talks to Kurzweil, which I think is like right after that, you see that Mulder's like, why would I trust this weirdo? And it's like, why would anyone trust you, sir?
Exactly. Like, well, isn't that the pot calling the kettle black?
He's like, I knew your daddy. We were war buddies or something like that.
Yeah, it is funny how Mulder does kind of come off as like a little bit naive a lot of times throughout the series, where he just like readily accepts people's explanations and like believes people when they say, oh yeah, I knew your dad. And but like for the first time, it's like finally he's questioning as the default setting, you know, questioning somebody who's making that kind of claim instead of just jumping on board with them immediately because they're saying the sort of things that he wants to hear. But then it turns out that we get the photo album, and yeah, there's Mr. Kurzweil back there with his 70s hairdo.
Right. Same face from the 90s, but 70s darker hairstyle, sipping backyard cocktails with dad.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think just in like this, the structure of the film, I always remember it. I was like, okay, there's a bombing. I'm pretty sure he finds it inside like a vending machine or something like that. And so I was like, okay, I know that's happening. And I guess I never connected the dots before. I haven't seen this movie in quite a while, but I never sort of strategically put together that, oh, like prehistoric cavemen. And then that whole story in the beginning with the kids in Texas. And then the bombing was actually a cover up for that incident. And then the bodies inside the building that were recovered were from the incident. They were being held there. And then like this, like the ranting about the superpowers of FEMA. And I'm just like, you know,
yeah, that makes me laugh.
Yeah. Cause in real life, like, yeah, FEMA has massive limitations. So yeah, I was like, oh, I was like the whole time I was like, they had closed the X-Files. There, he's just forced to do regular FBI stuff now. And there was like a terrorist bombing. And so I thought that was just like a completely separate thing.
Separate storyline.
Yeah, would have. I mean, it's a great way to sort of like open their side of the story with some action. There's some stakes that happen. It explains sort of like why they're not working on alien stuff. And then it wasn't until maybe this time of me actually paying attention or like having the capacity to pay attention to the fact that like, oh, everything was connected underneath that. And I guess that's why you need a guy like Kurzweil in the story to be like, hey, guess what? Like, I actually know what happened. And Mulder and Scully would have never known any of this had I not sort of been the catalyst here.
Yeah, that is definitely true. I mean, Mulder, you know, he has kind of a weird amount of luck in his investigations in his life. And he just happens upon the bomb when he's in the wrong building, or, you know, not the building that the bomb threat was called into. He just like plays his hunches and randomly stumbles upon things all the time. And so here we go. We've got Mulder who has found this bomb, and but that would have been the end of it if it weren't for Kurzweil. It would have just been like, oh, yep. Well, we saved some people, but bomb still went off. And okay, I guess we'll go to the next FBI anti-terrorism assignment, you know, and joke about how it's hot up on the roof. I don't know. Definitely. Kurzweil is like, he moves the story forward in a way that he's completely integral to the entire movie.
Yeah, which is an interesting play because, yeah, like, I have to go back and watch the pilot again, but I could have sworn that they mentioned a name like that in the very beginning, in that first introduction with Scully when she's being assigned to Mulder as her partner. I could have sworn, I mean, maybe it just was some other name that rang some like weird familiarity bell, but it would make sense if that continues to be this sort of like current that brings them all the way here. But what you're saying about Mulder like accidentally stumbling across the bomb, like he knew though that he was sort of actually in the right building to begin with, and he stumbles across it when he's actually like given up that it would be there. But I think what is lost from that first episode where they actually respect him and like verbally respect him to the audience is that like he's brilliant and he studies serial killers. And if you're like a serial bomber or a terrorist, that probably falls more within lines of like his specialty than alien shit. And so his logic for the bomb being in the other building only makes sense if you allow yourself to categorize him as the person that you described in the first episode. But if he's the spooky basement guy, Spooky Mulder, who is just obsessed with aliens, then yeah, that's why. So it's just weird because like Scully knows who he is and she respects him. And so for her to just be like, oh, yeah, you're kind of like you're coming completely out of left field with this one. And why would we be on this other building? It's like, well, yeah, before I was in the basement, I was the biggest authority on serial killers and serial killer psychology. And that's what my PhD is in and all that. So I'm kind of a brilliant guy, but I do also like sunflower seeds and aliens.
Yeah, the sunflower seeds. I like that that's one of the first things we see from him, or I don't know, early in the movie, they throw that out. I have to say, I've never understood Mulder's logic on that. He basically seems to just say, well, I'm bored and there's a bunch of agents in that building over there. So I'm going to say, like, possibly this guy is bullshitting us and maybe it's this building right here. I mean, and there are more than two buildings in the city. So like
in Dallas,
it's an intersection. So there's probably at least four right around there. Like what made him think that that one was number two was the one to go to, you know? So I never really understood how Mulder was getting to that conclusion. Fair. Other than like, let's just do something off the wall, because if we don't occasionally do things off the wall, then off the wall things will catch us by surprise.
Thank you for checking out this preview episode of Bi-Mon Sci-Fi-Con. I look forward to embarking on this journey with Stephanie, and I hope you had a good time with us too. If you did, you can join the Resistance members only and get more exclusives like Bad Movie Futures, Rom-Comathon, and anything else I decide to tack on by clicking on the link in the show notes or going to badmovieswelove.captivate.fm/support.
Yes, that is a mouthful. Probably switching over to Patreon in 2026. So, until next time,
thank you for listening. Be good, do good. Take care, everybody.
Mr. Pop.
Eat.